Totally Football Show today. Kane, Payne, Higuain, David Wagner on a plane. We ran up all the big developments and we give our verdict on Spygate. With Derby shaking their fists harder than Oxford's self-completing Gavin White, we ask, did Bielsa pull off the biggest public masterstroke by not washing his hands of it? Huge issues in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. In the pod for you, Emma Saunders.
Hello.
Hi, Emma. We got some exciting revelations about you and your past coming up.
We do.
Looking forward to that. Duncan Alexander.
Hi, James.
Hi, Duncan. And also, sorry, the pause was because I was just wondering, you were just mentioning Oxford United's statement about the white stuff.
The white stuff, yeah. It was very delicately handled, although they're sort of playing on the fact that he was a shy lad seemed a brave move.
Right. Also here, Matt Davis-Adams, who's excited about Arsenal-Chelsea.
Very much so. Hiya.
And so many other things. So much has happened since we were last in. But I mentioned at the start that the news about Harry Kane, which is obviously huge, and David Wagner then leaving Huddersfield very much by mutual consent. The whole business with Bielsa exploding. And also, of course, FA Cup replays. Let's begin, though, shall we, with ahead of that Arsenal-Chelsea clash, Matt, with the situation at the top. Arsenal, of course, now fighting off Man United. Those two teams are 6 points behind Chelsea, who are themselves a point behind this wounded-looking Spurs. Spurs face Fulham this weekend. United host Brighton. The pressure's going to be on Arsenal and Chelsea. Matt, you're going to be all over this for Chelsea TV.
During the game against Newcastle last week, when Willian made it 2-1 to Chelsea, I mentioned to Clive Walker, my co-commentator, and he agreed that there was like an odd hush that fell over the stadium as people realised how significant it would be if Chelsea won that game, Arsenal having lost at West Ham earlier in the day. Because if Chelsea go and win at Arsenal, then I would say they've effectively knocked them out of the race for the top four, because they'd be nine points ahead of them. It's one of those games, isn't it? There's like a Premier League classic, but we kind of come to this one with neither at the peak of their powers, and particularly Arsenal, it seems, this week. There's a lot of misery around them, so maybe it's a good time.
What's your record like at the Emirates?
Pretty good. The only defeat in the last 14 games that Chelsea have suffered against Arsenal home and away in the Premier League was the infamous 3-0 September 2016 when Conte switched to the back three for the second half. Other than that, obviously, Arsenal put Chelsea out of the League Cup at the semi-final stage last season, in the Premier League in particular. Yeah, Chelsea's record is good there. Not as good as it was when Didier Drogba was playing.
And as you mentioned, the shine rather coming off Arsenal's season of late. They've lost two of their last three. Most recently, the defeat at West Ham. Haven't kept a clean sheet since early December. And bad news off-field with Sven Mislintat. Is it Mislintat?
Yeah, he does like a stat, so...
There you go. Yeah. He's now leaving only 14 months after joining.
Yeah.
Is that shock news, Duncan?
It is shock news because he was brought in to kind of, you know, restock the talent pool at Arsenal. They kind of got the reverse problem to Chelsea in a way. Chelsea have got so many good youngsters, they can't fit them into the team. Arsenal, you know, they haven't really had that much strength in depth coming through. And, you know, even when they've got big players like Mesut Ozil, he's not getting in the team either, which I think is the other big story there. Of all teams he's never assisted against in the Premier League, there aren't many, but Chelsea are the main ones. He's played them 9 times and never assisted. So Emery could be justified in not playing him again this weekend.
See, I would play Ozil in this game. I know he's effectively been frozen out, and Ramsey, in the same way, is likely probably not to play, but I'd play both of them. Arsenal's problems with their defending, surely it's known Arsenal's best form of defence is attack. So in a game like this, I think they've just got to bring it to Chelsea. Matt, obviously you see Chelsea week in, week out, but would it be that kind of setup that they'd have a chance against Chelsea? Would you agree?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, it's not really been pointed out that Chelsea have actually got a really good defensive record this season, second fewest goals conceded behind Liverpool. I think the other thing with Ozil potentially playing him is that they clearly want to get rid of him, or Emery doesn't like him, so you need a shop window for the next couple of weeks, don't you? So, you know, if you put him in and he had a game like he did against Leicester, when was that, back in September, then maybe somebody would be tempted to...
Who would you take out then?
Potentially Iwobi, I suppose, but I think there's no tactical justification potentially for playing Ozil. But yeah, you know, if you want to get rid of him, then people need to be seeing him playing, I suppose. But who's going to take him on 350 grand a week or somewhere near that? Apparently he's not keen on leaving because he knows that nobody's going to match that. So it's a bit of a standoff, and again, sort of speaks to this odd malaise that's fallen over Arsenal after they were so not impressive, but they had that really long unbeaten run.
And actually,
they were really good in the reverse fixture back in August when they were ever so unlucky to lose to a late goal 3-2. They came back twice.
Yeah, that game was very strange, wasn't it? The first half in particular, both teams pretty much gave up the concept of defending, and it was end to end. Backing up Emma's point about Arsenal's defence not being very good, they've lost the ball in their defensive third, which has led to a shot more than any other team in the Premier League this season.
My word.
So that's not good.
Having said that, you know, Arsenal could be 9 points behind Chelsea at the end of this. They've got a really nice run coming up. Four of their next six in the Premier League are at home. Cardiff, Southampton and Bournemouth amongst the teams coming to the Emirates, and they go away to Huddersfield. So if they were to win this game, then, you know, it all flips around, doesn't it? And they've got a chance to put some pressure on Chelsea and Spurs too.
Mm. Chelsea, meanwhile, with some good news, although I think it's still not officially confirmed. It does look like Gonzalo Higuain will be joining them, providing the side with the striker, the person who's going to do the work in the final third that Maurizio Sarri had been crying out for. Higuain, it has to be said, finished off the first half of the Serie A season by ending a two-month goal-scoring drought. So is he the player that's going to help sort the Blues out? To get an opinion from a man who's seen an awful lot of Gonzalo, we dialed up James Horncastle.
Well, I think the hope is that by reuniting him with Maurizio Sarri, you get the Gonzalo Higuain of 2 or 3 years ago, who scored 36 goals in a single season in Serie A, which broke the single season scoring record, which had stood since 1950. Kind of one of the reasons why Higuain, at least in Italy, is viewed as one of the top five strikers in the world. I think if you were to expand that debate outside of Serie A and talk to non-Italians, they would probably remember him choking in various finals for his country, missing big chances. But certainly in Italy, he's delivered in big games and he's delivered goals. But you have to say that his season at Milan, his first 4 months have been pretty disappointing. And I think his awareness of the club's disappointment in him is one of the reasons why he's sought out this move.
Mm. 2 months without scoring, although there was a hefty suspension in the middle of that. You say that's the plan for Chelsea, that the Sarri factor will reawaken the great striker in him. Do you think that's going to happen?
Well, I think everything's set up at Chelsea for him to do well, I think. I think he's a plug-and-play player in that he knows that system very well. I think there's been a lot of conjecture about what hasn't really worked for Chelsea in the last few weeks or so, and it's I think it comes down to the team not having a lot of time on the training ground with Sarri to work on collective. I think they just have time to work on the game plan for the next game. They're playing every 3 days. He's someone who I think knows what Sarri expects from a striker beyond just goals. And also reconnects with Jorginho as well, someone who he had a good understanding with whilst he was at Napoli. So, you know, it does break policy from Chelsea in terms of signing a player who's already over 30, turned 31 last month. But to be honest, they seemed willing to do that for Edin Dzeko this time last year. It was only that Dzeko turned them down that that deal didn't eventually happen. But he's much more than a goal scorer. Higuain, he's someone who brings others into play. I think that's often something that's overlooked about him. That was certainly something that Juventus tried to use more of him for when he was in Turin for 2 years. And to be honest, he did pretty well then. He scored the goal that kind of broke the camel's back last year for Juve, which ended Napoli's title challenge when Juventus came back and won in against Inter at San Siro. And he scored 23 goals in all comps in his first season there, 32 in all comps in his second season at Juventus. So while he hasn't hit the same heights that he did at Napoli under Sarri, he's still been a prolific goal scorer for the last couple of years.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Matt, are you excited about Big Hig's arrival?
I was really excited, and then last time I was on, you pointed out all the ways in which he's been a bit rubbish at Milan, so that's slightly lessened my enthusiasm. But
to be fair, Milan have been a bit rubbish
in many ways. And that's a bit of a graveyard for strikers generally, isn't it? So
yeah. Andre Silva, look what he's doing since he left.
Quite.
So you've got quite a good record of bringing in, you know, strikers in their autumn years. No, genuinely, there are a few that haven't worked, obviously, but it's quite reminiscent of when they got Samuel Eto'o. 9 goals in 21 games, which I think would be, you know, if Higuain did that, it'd be decent.
Yeah, got a hat-trick against Man United. I'm quite excited about Higuain because obviously Morata hasn't worked and Higuain's obviously a bit more physical. And it's better than spending £75 million on Callum Wilson, who's a player who I think is really good, but probably not worth that. And he's had 3 serious knee injuries. And even now, you know, he's missed the last few games with a hamstring problem. He does seem to be quite susceptible. Chelsea going to need a big focal point. It's probably better to be somebody a bit more robust like Higuain. And if it's a loan till the end of the season, then there's not much you can lose, is there?
I suppose not. Another team who could be crying out for a striker are, of course, Tottenham Hotspur, Emma. After the terrible news for poor Harry Kane, who was seen visibly in discomfort at the end of last weekend's game against Manchester United, and the news that he's not going to be back until March.
Yeah.
This is the 4th successive season that he's had an ankle issue.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't look good for Tottenham, but my stance on this is I don't think they'll bring anyone in. Daniel Levy doesn't spend any money anyway. Doesn't Trent tend to do a lot of transfer business? What makes you think that he'll bring in some huge striker that's going to replace the England captain?
So what are
not
they going
to happen?
What are they going to do?
In this situation, you need a manager that has good man management skills. And who have you got? Maurizio Pochettino, the best man for the job.
Mm.
Lucas Moura put out a tweet yesterday that indicated he is on the road to recovery. I don't know what the timeline is with that, but he kind of hinted it won't be too long until he's back involved.
Can he play up front as a...
Can he
fill that role for them?
Well, not necessarily the exact role that Kane played.
But role.
You know, yeah, he's a creative player. He's an attacking player. And Son, I think at most he will miss up to the Newcastle match, which isn't really too bad. I think it's 4 or 5 games altogether. So he should be back in time for both of the Borussia Dortmund legs.
And potentially the Carabao Cup final.
Yeah, I guess that's what they got to get through, this semi-final, really. That's the big, big test for Tottenham. Can they get through that semi-final?
All right. You haven't mentioned the name of Fernando Llorente yet.
Yes. Oh, I'm not hugely convinced which role he'll have to play, really, in this situation. I think he's played about half an hour of football, hasn't he, so far?
He's made 6 sub-appearances in the Premier League this season. Mm-hmm. That's it. And, yeah, against Man United, he got 10 minutes. It's quite a lot to ask of a 33-year-old to come in and have that impact.
With Pochettino putting his arm around his shoulders, can you imagine the boost that'll offer? Hat-trick against Tranmere Rovers very recently. So, and they're playing Fulham this weekend. Mm. It's the ideal chance to wheel him out and you know, pull his string and let him rock.
I mean, Dele Alli as well is another option. He scored 4 times in the 9 games he's played when Harry Kane hasn't played any part.
Okay.
So, they have got options. I mean, none of them are perfect, but if anyone can find a way, you'd imagine Pochettino can.
Right. And to be fair, you might not actually need strikers against Fulham, who famously conceded 2 goals without any shots on target last weekend.
I was just going to add as well, we all know that Pochettino is very good at encouraging younger players to come through. And I remember it was only a few years ago when I was at Watford when we were playing Manchester United, when their side was absolutely riddled with injury. And we noticed on the bench number 39, Marcus Rashford. Who's that? We all looked at each other. And sure enough, in the coming weeks, he ended up making himself a main part of Manchester United's team. So whether it gives way to
Troy
one of
Parrott.
One of the many.
Would that be Troy Parrott? Is that the name?
Yeah, he's a 16-year-old who's played a couple of times in the EFL Trophy this season. He's an Ireland under-19 international striker. I think he's the next in line to.
It's also the name
Harry's
of the Chaz and Dave album.
Okay, well, that's the situation then. Is it? It's Fulham at Spurs this weekend?
It's at Craven Cottage.
It's at Craven Cottage.
Yeah, Fulham starting the weekend 5 points from safety. Obviously, could be more by the time Sunday rolls around. You often look at games for teams, you know, in the lower half, certainly in the bottom 6 against the top 6, and you say, oh, this is a free hit for them. But I think we're kind of past that stage with Fulham now. So they will be looking at this as an opportunity to take something from Spurs, given that they are Kane-less.
We've yet to see Ranieri pull off one of his coups, you know, some big surprise upset.
He's going to unleash Ryan Babel.
So.
Ryan Babel's first Premier League game since Roy Hodgson's last match as Liverpool manager.
Wow.
Be.
Extraordinary. So, Matt, you're suggesting that Fulham might spring a surprise, might turn over Tottenham?
I'm not sure if I'd go so far as to say I'm suggesting they might do that, but I think that it's not a game that they can say, hey, well, look, we've got a big game coming up next week, so we'll, you know, do what Benitez does and maybe not pick a full-strength team with an eye on that one, because they're running out of games and they're 5 points from safety.
Mitrovic, he scored in, I think, the last three meetings when he's faced Tottenham.
Mitrovic, who was pulled off Kamara, not like an Oxford United player, but was Kamara Mitrovic, was it?
Yeah, there's allegedly been this punch-up.
During a yoga session?
During a relaxation session. I mean, that says a lot, doesn't it, about the temperament of the players at the club at the moment.
You want that kind of passion when you're in a relegation scrap.
Well, you do, but you also need the team to be in harmony and to be working together.
Do you know, in all the sports films I've ever seen, the fight has always led to some kind of special bond being built between players.
Hmm. And winning the big one, and maybe the big one against the local rivals.
Yeah.
That's the narrative here, isn't it? I'm calling it, yeah. Fulham to beat Spurs on Sunday.
Fulham to beat Spurs.
But it also marks the start of the remaining Fulham home games. They've still got Tottenham, Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea and Manchester City to play at home before the end of this season. And, you know, to stay up, you need to have some kind of home form. So they're going to have to pull it out of the bag against at least one of these big teams that will be visiting in the coming months. So
it's a huge game then this weekend.
It is.
Huge
Why
game.
Why not go for a wounded Tottenham Hotspur?
Absolutely. The other match, of course, is Man United at home to Brighton. Will Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, assimilating all the advice I've been given, that's what I think his name is, will he get 7 wins in a row, Duncan?
He might do. He should do. He's playing Brighton at home. You'd imagine he would. I mean, if he does, he'll equal the Premier League record for most wins at the start of a managerial career at a club, which is 6, held by Antonio Conte and Pep Guardiola. So that's pretty good company to be in.
Right. Magnificent. Seagulls, of course, have only won 3 of their last 24 on the road, although they had beaten United in their last 2 meetings, but they were both at the Amex. All right, then.
And they were both at Jose Mourinho.
Fair point. OK, well, that's the situation vis-a-vis the teams battling for a place in the top 4 in Champions League football next season. After this, we'll move on to one of the other really big stories this week, the fallout from the Leeds Derby affair.
People of the Totally Football Shows, you know what you could be listening to right here? You, your company, your product, out here in front of hundreds and thousands of listeners who are mostly men between the ages of 25 and 44. As well as the twice-weekly Totally Football Show, we've got a network of other football shows. There's Galazzo for the discerning cosmopolitan listener. There's the Totally Football League Show for the loyal, hardy listener. And there's the Totally Scottish Football Show for your listener who likes those big square sausages. And we've got even more podcasts on the way in 2019. Some of them not even based around football or indeed sport. To discuss advertising on one of the Totally Football Shows or across the Muddy Knees Media Network, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. We reach well over 1 million pairs of ears each week, and now you can too. Email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
Marcelo Bielsa, call him Bielsa-bub, Matt, with his nefarious arcane tactics of researching other teams and that. Much excitement on Tuesday. You recall that this all began because when Derby played away at Leeds beforehand, a figure was apprehended with a pair of pliers outside the Derby training ground. It turned out to be a Leeds employee. And Bielsa said, yes, I sent him to spy to try and unlock the secret to Frank Lampard's Rams. Now, Wednesday, after much talk of things like points deductions, Bielsa suddenly announced a press briefing. A lot of people thought, oh my goodness, he's going to resign. But instead, what followed was very different, I think. An over an hour of briefing in which he deconstructed Derby's squad and tactics for the entire world to see as a kind of one-man football WikiLeaks, in the interest, he said, of helping the FA's inquiry. The whole performance and the level of detail that he has had tactics and stats geeks rushing to find fresh trousers. Duncan, what did you think?
Well, luckily I wasn't wearing trousers at the time, so I didn't need to find fresh ones. No, I mean, it was impressive what Bielsa showed, but I think what was more surprising was the reaction, I think, of a lot of the journalists who were there, who seemed quite baffled that a club would go to this level of detail.
How deep was the level of detail?
Well, I mean, they'd watched all of their opponents' games, they'd prepared tactical analysis of what they do. You know, I mean, this is pretty standard stuff throughout the top four leagues in England now. And you know, there are various companies, Opta being one, and there are others as well, that will provide tools that can help you do this. You know, Bielsa, he looked like he did a lot of his work quite manually. But, you know, each manager will have their own method. But this stuff is pretty standard now.
At Opta, you know, as professionals in this game, what did you make of his research?
No, it was admirably thorough. But, I mean, as I said, it's what you'd expect a club of that size and stature going for promotion to be doing.
Right. A lot of people also felt that he had stitched up Derby a treat by splashing all their information about their squad, about their set-piece routines.
That was excellent. I mean, the fact that he basically just said, right, this is what we've got on Derby, you know, it was Frank Lampard.
By way of example.
Yeah. Good team, random team to pick there. So some of the colour...
Will that damage them?
I don't think so. I mean, as I said, most of the other Championship clubs will have similar information to that.
I like the fact that he said, listen, I'm going to hold my hands out. I did this not because... You know, not for any kind of nefarious purpose, but just because I'm a complete obsessive and I'm not right in the head. And I need to do this just to kind of keep the voices quiet.
I think a lot of the media reaction to it, which has been quite fawning, has been because it's Bielsa, without acknowledging that he's got a team of 20 people who help him out with it. So it's not, you know, just something that he's done, watched 51 games, analysed them for 4 hours on his own, and this is what he's come up with. But, you know, the sight of all those blue folders was quite... satisfying. I watched it unfold on Twitter, which I think was actually the best way to do it. From the people who were live tweeting it, Phil Hay of the Yorkshire Evening Post did a good job. My favourite being, this has gone on so long that Bielsa is having to let a few journalists out of the door. But yeah, it's just, you know, as Duncan says, it's what every team does these days. Certainly, I mean, probably even down to League One level, I would say. I mean, they maybe don't have 20 employees that they can call on to help them with the analysis. But Frank Lampard was quite funny in his post-match press conference after the Southampton game last night, coming in and saying, everybody ready for my presentation, was quite a nice way to deflect it. But they did have Oldham United down as one of the teams they've been studying, so maybe not as thorough as it should be, because of course they are Oldham Athletic.
It's a fair point. But, and anyway, beyond all of this, just returning to the business at the Derby training ground, Emma, that kind of thing happens as well all over the place. We've heard Villas Boas admitting that he did it.
It's naive to think this doesn't go on.
Right.
In this case, it's PR genius from the club, Leeds United, from Bielsa, to go out and own this. When people are talking of point deduction, what do you do when Leeds turn around and say, actually, we've been doing this in every single game?
Right.
And also, I think what he did yesterday, what the club did yesterday, it's got all the fans back on side. And a lot of the neutrals now have a kind of smirking at this situation. And I think Leeds have got a lot of the neutrals on board from it too. It seems like more of a popular opinion now to find this quite funny as a whole situation. It was clever in that Bielsa did this and put all the stats out there and let the average football fan into the lives of what it's like being a coach of Leeds United. And it just, it's just made this hysteria around this stupid topic, which all the professionals in the game are turning around and saying, this happens all the time, it's madness. But this is what football fans are like. It's typical news and it's extraordinary people doing ordinary things, but we are fascinated by it as football fans. I will completely admit that even at the end of Watford matches, the players will all be given a whole bunch of food and energy drinks and stuff, and there's often a lot left over, and a few of us staff will go in and mop up effectively, get a little snack after the game. And often you look to the side and some of the tactical stuff is left on the board. And it does. I've worked for the club for 3-4 years. It gives you, it's almost like a bit of a buzz looking at it, thinking, oh, you know, this is quite an exclusive behind the scenes look at the club. So for the average fan to have been let into the Leeds United camp to this extent, it's just created such a buzz. And at a critical time of year, they've got past Christmas, they're top of the Championship table. And I really do think it's going to give them some momentum for the second half of the season.
Right.
And I think it's quite good. I mean, last week, a lot of the talk was about how all Manchester United needed was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to put his arm around players and cheer them up. But this week is the flip side to that. You know, you can see the amount of research that clubs do ahead of games and all their planning, and maybe it's actually a bit of both is the key to a successful manager.
I hear you. Derby anyway did roar back Wednesday night and did score from a set piece with Harry Wilson, who featured heavily of course in Bielsa's presentation, coming from 2-0 down against Saints for the second game in a row to win ultimately 5-3 on penalties. As a reward, they get to travel to Accrington Stanley in the fourth round. That's on Saturday, the 26th of January. There were other how many? Three other FA Cup replays. Sheffield Wednesday got their place in the fourth round sorted with a 1-0 win at Luton. Shrewsbury away at Stoke, coming from 2-0 down themselves for a 3-2 win. Not good that for Stoke's new manager, Nathan Jones, who's having a rough time of it.
He's got to play Leeds next.
Has he?
Yeah, so who's going to be at the training ground today?
It's a very good question. And, of course, they've got Wolves then in the fourth. I say, of course, but they have. They've got Wolves in the fourth round. And also through this week, much to their manager's displeasure, Newcastle, who beat Blackburn Rovers 4-2 at a cost, as we'll hear shortly, although perhaps, Duncan, you want to say something right now about that?
It was Newcastle's first away win in the FA Cup since January 2006, which is a long time ago, and was the same time that, remember that whale that swam up the Thames and sort of died outside Parliament? So I don't know if there's a sort of connection.
And an eerie presage of... Yeah, as you say, Leeds face Stoke next, and Bielsa said, we've looked at Stoke, it's hard as the new coach has only had three games, so we analysed the 26 games he's had at Luton. It's extraordinarily thorough, isn't it?
I saw Stoke last weekend.
Did you?
Yeah, I can tell you that it won't take hours and hours of analysis.
It might feel like hours and hours.
To see that they're just not very good, actually.
All right, okay. Oh, a quick word before we move back onto other things. Forrest, Daniel Sturridge writing off Martin O'Neill, your brand new manager, as a right man, wrong time. I think he was even being polite with that. What do you think, Matt?
Heart says this is great. Head says he hasn't been in club football for 5 years and his last few jobs haven't gone very well at all. I'm interested that his press is not till later today. There's been nothing on the length of his contract. If it's a short-term, Henry Winter's made this point, Solskjaer-like appointment, then maybe it could work. But changing your manager in the Championship at this point to try and get promoted hardly ever works. I mean, it is really nice that Martin O'Neill is back at Forest for a bit, but if he does what Stuart Pearce did and wins 3 out of 24 games, then it's not so good. The information that's been disseminated by some of the Forest media cabal, who are a bit higher up the food chain than me, is that whilst Lovisa Jokanovic wanted a ridiculous amount of money, but he's got two teams promoted to the Premier League in recent memory, one of them last season from a position not dissimilar to Forest, and the money for going in the Premier League is ginormous, so why not just give him that money and let him do it? I'm also slightly concerned about the presence of Roy Keane. I don't mind Martin O'Neill.
Is Roy Keane part of the package?
They are negotiating his deal as we speak. He's expected to come in as the number two, but I'm not sure 2019 getting screamed at by Roy Keane is going to make you play much better. Obviously, he's ex-Forest as well. But yeah, we'll see. They've sold out the game for Bristol City on Saturday, so commercially it's a good thing for the club, at least in the short term. But yeah, to be convinced. I really hope it works.
OK, Forest currently lying ninth, 4 points off the playoffs. There's more of this kind of thing in the Totally Football League show, if you would like. Right, well, after this, we'll return to the Premier League and talk about the weather.
Prospects don't look too bright for Arsenal and Chelsea at White Hart Lane. Slap into it, chaps, and let's see what it's like underneath. Looks a hefty lot to clear away in 2 hours or so if the ref says it's okay to play. And here's Mr. Lutie, the ref, making up his mind. It's a bit tricky. Just a little more off the top, please. Now shovel it all back, no play today.
That's right, listener, they're talking about snow. And they could well be this weekend, because there's beaucoup of blizzard predicted up and down this happy aisle. And Greaves says, with the potential for snow this weekend, what's the best ever Premier League game played in the snow?
Well, there aren't many, because they've all got undersoil heating now.
Ooh.
So they've destroyed even that. The orange ball. I mean, my favourite image from a snow-based football ground was the John Motson one ahead of a Wickham-Peterborough FA Cup tie in 1990.
Uh-huh.
And that was the thing that launched his sheepskin coat meme, as it would be called now. So he wasn't associated with the sheepskin coat until that moment.
And what happened? What did he do with the coat, though?
Well, he just stood in the snow, reporting from a game that couldn't be played.
In a sheepskin coat.
Yeah, and then that became his thing.
Wow.
It's funny every montage of John Motson has that shot or snow related to football. It's iconic.
I don't have happy memories of going to football in snow, I've got to be honest. Do you remember The Beast from the East last March?
Yes.
I was at Molyneux that day for Wolves against Burton, the glamour tie. It was so cold, most of the written journalists stayed in the press room and watched the game on screens in there. But being broadcast, I had to go outside.
Right. How cold was it? Do you have a number?
It was, I think it was in the minuses, wasn't it?
Like and minus
it,
eight.
It was just
nine.
Relentless snow.
Right.
And the way that the stand we were in hung over the pitch, it blocked the sunlight. So when there were spells of blue sky, I think 2/3 of the pitch, really, it had melted and they were able to clear. But this third nearest us, the flank nearest us, it just didn't melt at all. So it meant the whole game was played on only 2/3 of the pitch anyway. And it just, it made the whole thing
That's brilliant.
Bizarre.
You know, they should do that much like Fortnite. Just have the space of play continually narrowed throughout the match. And certainly when you go into extra time, you should get an ever decreasing strip of the pitch.
Well, a lot of managers in League One and League Two do that every week, to be fair.
Coldest game I've ever been at was Russia, Italy in the World Cup qualifying playoff for World Cup 98, France 98, and that was I think minus 15. Me and Joe Jordan, who barely flinched in his probably a singlet and a shorts or something, but yeah, that was cold.
That sounds pretty cold, yeah.
Yeah, Buffon making his Italy debut in a 1-1 draw, very exciting. Emma, you wanted to be a weather person.
I did. If I'd got the interview and got the job that day, I probably wouldn't be sat here.
Damn.
Did a degree in geography. Yeah. And before I got into all the sports journalism business at the BBC,
right,
had an interview at the Met Office in Exeter.
Did you? Yeah. And what went wrong?
Well, they obviously didn't like me. I don't know. I was destined to do something else and here I am.
Here's a funny thing, because Matt, you also interviewed or something to be a weatherman, didn't you?
Yeah. Very much back in the day, probably... when I was finishing uni, so around 03, the BBC did this like kind of X Factor style, let's find the next local
star.
Weatherman. Yeah.
Right.
So I went in and auditioned and they gave you...
what was the audition?
It was read off an auto cue, a 3-minute weather thing, but do some improvisation around it. And my improvisation was around the fact that there was some rain. I said something like, so make sure you take a brolly. And I just saw the person making that shake their head as I said that, like, whoa, come on. Maybe, you know, back
right.
in the 50s when weather was first on telly, that would have been an acceptable piece of off-the-cuff banter. But, yeah, stayed, I think they thought it was. So
all right.
They showed me the door.
Should have just shouted rumours of a hurricane over and over again for 3 minutes.
But if we ever launch Totally Weather... when we launch Totally Weather, we've got some homegrown talent right here.
Yeah.
Well, we could certainly audition.
Anyway, all right, well, that's splendid. In amongst all the snow that will be coming down, and speaking of, you know, minus plenty, minus numbers, Fulham, who are down in the bottom three, they've got that clash with Spurs that we mentioned before. Newcastle, who freshly dropped into the bottom three, have a huge game with Cardiff, who are just a point above them.
Mm.
Huddersfield, meanwhile, are hosting Man City, and Huddersfield now with an interim boss, Coach Mark Hudson, after David Wagner's departure on Monday. Lovely way for Mark Hudson to start, although I suppose it's one of those free hits you were talking about, home to Man City, is that right?
Yeah, and he's apparently strongly linked with actually getting the job on a permanent basis, and Huddersfield, I think, are fairly certain they're going to make an announcement almost in the immediate aftermath of that game. But it's a difficult sell, isn't it? Because it's effectively a couple of months of misery and then a championship job rather than a Premier League job. I don't think anybody realistically thinks that 11 points from 22 games, Huddersfield are going to be in a position to stay up. And particularly, I mean, they got absolutely walloped in the reverse fixture, didn't they, against Man City. If they get another heavy beating, then if they haven't got it already sorted, it becomes an even less attractive proposition.
Yeah, City, who scored, what was it, 19 goals in the last three? Would that be right? Something like that. And Gabriel Jesus, I think, with 6-2.
He's got 7 goals in 2019, which is
right.
3 more than Liverpool. 4 more than Liverpool.
Wow.
One of those numbers.
Yeah.
Mark Hudson never won a Premier League game as a player, so he's possibly got the experience he needs.
Where was he playing, Duncan?
Crystal Palace, I think. Yeah.
Man City might want to rest players ahead of the second leg against Burton next week, I suppose.
Okay, well, there's that game. Newcastle taking on Cardiff, as I mentioned. Just 1 point between the sides. They are the second and third lowest scorers in the division. It was 0-0 naturally last time they faced each other. And Rafa Benitez struggling with further injuries because that FA Cup third round replay on Tuesday with Blackburn, not only did it go to extra time with all the fatigue involved, but Kieran Clark got injured at halftime. His replacement, Jamal Lascelles, went off 10 minutes later. Fabian Schär, Isaac Hayden also limping off at the end. to join the likes of Paul Dummett, Modiame and Jonjo Shelvey on their injury list. Benitez may struggle to name an 11, it says here, for Saturday's crunch game against Cardiff, as the folks over at Eurosport were joking, if he loves the club that much, why doesn't Rafa just suit up?
They've got such a horrible home record, Newcastle. They won 2 of 11. I mean, they haven't won a home game in the league since the 10th of November. This is a massive game
it's
for them.
Probably the least effective home team taking on the least effective away team in the league. So
I can't see this being a festival of football in any sense. Cardiff apparently had 0 shots on target against Huddersfield, which sound like a stinker of a game.
Speaking of clubs ravaged by an injury crisis, Liverpool will be hosting Crystal Palace. Palace team who themselves are by no means safe 4 points from the drop. This is a tough game. Palace, of course, the team that did City, to everyone's shock and surprise, not too long ago.
And Wolves.
Yeah.
And Wolves.
I think there was something quite cautious about Liverpool's performance against Brighton, particularly in the first half. And I think they're probably going to have to take the same approach with Palace, because Brighton had Glenn Murray. I can just see with this sort of makeshift Liverpool back line with Fabinho playing as a centre-back.
And Trent Alexander-Arnold, the latest to go in.
Yeah, but, you know, your Wilfred Zaha's, your Aaron Wan-Bissaka's, they're going to cause more problems.
Your Christian Benteke's? Or now am I being
arguably
silly?
Not, yeah.
No, because he's, potentially. I think he's back now.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. He is meant to be back with a bang.
Former team as well.
But I just think, on the face of it, you think Liverpool win, but looking at this more closely, and you saw Palace did spring that surprise on Manchester City, it wouldn't surprise me if we see another largely cautious performance from Liverpool. I think they're just going to have to try and get through this one.
Christian Benteke, by the way, fabulous stat, of course, about him, former Liverpool player, but he's famously scored more goals against Liverpool at Anfield than he did there for them.
Did get a good overhead kick, consolation goal at Old Trafford, which I liked. But Liverpool Palace is a bit of a strange fixture, because Palace have got a habit of winning against Liverpool. They won 3 of the last 4 Premier League games at Anfield. They also obviously in 1990 beat Liverpool in the semi-final of the Cup.
Istanbul
3-3. But the flip side to that is the last time Liverpool won the league in 89-90, this fixture ended 9-0 to Liverpool. With eight different goal scorers, which is pretty good going. So I'm going to say that this game is going to decide the title. So if Liverpool win, then it's theirs. If they drop points in this game, it's over.
And if Liverpool do win, their points total will be up to 60, the same total they finished on in the Leicester City season.
Really?
When they finished 8th. What's more, Chelsea could hit 50 points this weekend. If they do beat Arsenal, which would also equal their total from the Leicester City season.
Really?
When they finished 10th.
Don't remind me about that.
Good Lord.
It was a tough sell for Chelsea TV that season.
Okay, the other game, just quickly mention here, Southampton, who are level on points with Cardiff, but have a better goal difference. They are hosting Everton, fresh from their defeat, Southampton that is, in the FA Cup third round replay. How much better are they doing under Ralf Hasenhüttl?
Well, according to our friends at Opta, 53% of Southampton's Premier League points this season, 10 of their 19, have been won in the 7 games that he's been in charge.
So that result was their 8th 0-0 in a row, and we've even had reports of fans falling asleep in their seats. Stuart is at the game, joins us now on the line. Stuart? Stuart?
Sounds like Stuart needed Paddy Power, because with our new Same Game Multi, you can combine multiple bets from the same game, so everything is exciting. Plus, you'll get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold Same Game Multi lets you down. Paddy Power, enough of the nonsense.
Applies to pre-match fourfold plus Same Game Multi bets. First qualifying bet only, max free bet £10 per customer per day. Exclude shop bets, T's and C's apply, 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
What do you want to talk about next? Do we want to talk about Watford Burnley, which you'll be voicing, you know, live for the folk at Vicarage Road?
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that, Emma?
Only in the sense that it should be another 3 points for Watford.
All right. Burnley have had 3 wins in a row, do you know?
They have, but
Sean Dyche,
they've beaten Fulham, they've beaten Barnsley, they've beaten Huddersfield. Granted, they beat West Ham, but They beat Watford. That's where I would say, oh, maybe Burnley are back to business.
Compared to what they were doing before, that's a corner they've turned.
Well, it is. It is. But what I'm saying is whether Burnley have answered all their questions and from here on up they're going to be climbing up the table, I don't know.
Sean Dyche will be falling back on his intimate knowledge of Watford, of course, as a former player.
Yes.
A former manager.
Former manager, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Watford, this will be the first time Watford have actually played at home in 2019.
Okay.
Their away record has seen a remarkable turnaround from last season, where Watford only scored one goal in that second half of that season.
Second half of seasons are not really your thing at Watford.
No,
are they? But
it's
maybe
not.
This year will be different.
It does look to be different this year.
Okay. Duncan, we had a question on Monday about, just speaking of Watford, and Craig Cathcart with his scoring a goal at one, an own
great
goal,
stats,
and then
yeah.
remedying it at the other. And a listener asked if it's statistically more likely to score a goal if you've already scored an own goal, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
If people who score own goals generally then manage to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you thought it might be.
Well, for me, it felt...
I know what you mean. It does feel like that happens quite a lot. It's basically happened 5% of the time. So 5% of the instances has been an own goal in Premier League history, that player has then gone on and scored at the other end or had scored beforehand at the right end.
What does that mean? 5%?
So 5% sounds okay, but then if you look at the players who've done it,
right,
their average scoring in games rate is about 13%. So it's actually blows. So if you actually look at the sort of players who have scored at both ends, you've got the likes of Rooney, Bale, Giroud, Beckham, so names that will sort of stand out and people go, oh, did you see, you know, Rooney scored at both ends?
I did see that, yeah.
And also high-scoring defenders like David Unsworth and John Terry. So I think what it actually is that when it happens, it's quite memorable. So people kind of, you know, think it's more common than it probably is.
I see. Thanks for that.
And Craig Cathcart has scored 4 Premier League goals and 4 Premier League own goals.
Oh, what balance.
So there we go.
Also this weekend, Wolves host Leicester. It's Wolves and Foxes. Do you think that this game will respect the natural order and see the Wolves triumph? Because surely, you know, a more dominant species, no? Where you'd pit a wolf and a fox.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, the leaders of the respective packs, you take Nuno over Puel every day of the week.
Also this weekend, Bournemouth taking on West Ham. No word yet on Arnautovic and his planned move to China. There has been suggestions linking West Ham, as every club, with Callum Wilson of Bournemouth. Equally, suggestions that Bournemouth might be in for Brentford's... Is it Chris Meppham?
Yeah, Meppham. Yeah. This sounds like it's got legs to it as well, because they've been sniffing around him for the last 2 transfer windows.
OK, is he any good?
I think the price tag that goes with this player is largely for potential. He's 20, 21, isn't he? And from what I've seen of him at Brentford, he certainly shows glimpses of being very good, but he's just so young. His disciplinary record isn't very good because I think he makes a lot of bad decisions, which will come with experience. I'm sure that's bound to improve. Has a very good passing game, and I think Brentford will be gutted to see him go. But it's just going to be another one of those things where it'll be interesting to see if someone that's really well respected in the Championship managed to cut it in the Premier League. We've seen with Fulham that Joe Bryan and Cyrus Christie haven't exactly got off to a flying start, and they were both, especially Joe Bryan, very well regarded in the Championship.
Bournemouth, I guess, would look to David Brooks, wouldn't they?
Yes, yeah. But £15 million, I think, is the price tag that they're putting on him. I think it's one of those, we probably won't see him straight away, but there's a view that in years to come, him and Ake will build this partnership.
Abroad, some of the big leagues cranking back up into action this weekend, Matt. Serie A is back, fresh from Wednesday's grotesque Super Cup in Saudi Arabia, 1-0 by Juventus, naturally, over Milan in what probably marks Gonzalo Higuain's final appearance, and a fleeting one for the Rossoneri. They, this weekend, 9 points clear, of course, of second place Napoli, will be hosting Chievo, who are bottom of the table, conversely, and on their third manager of this campaign. Games that you might find more entertaining were you to find them. Fiorentina-Sampdoria should be good. Both teams reinforcing already. Luis Muriel coming in for Fiorentina, and Samp have got Gabbiadini back in. That's one of the few clubs he's actually played well for. And they've got Quagliarella, who's brilliant. And Napoli-Lazio, which is huge. Lazio fighting to make it into the Champions League places. And Napoli there trying to hold Inter off in the race for second, effectively. Well, more about all that in the return of Golazzo this week, in which we also discuss Aaron Ramsey's prospects in Turin. Bundesliga is back as well, with Dortmund 6 points clear of Bayern München. And Ligue 1 continues, where there's going to be a top v bottom clash. PSG taking on Guingamp. PSG 13 points clear, as we established on Monday, with two games in hand. The team just above Guingamp, meanwhile, are Monaco. They finally got to play that game against Nice with the big Thierry Henry Patrick Vieira reunion, which was originally scheduled for the 7th of December, but of course the crazy folk and the Gilets jaunes disrupted all of that. So it took place anyway Wednesday night. What happened? Well, we have a man who was on the spot in Tom Williams, who joins us now on the line from Nice Airport. Hello, Tom. How was it at the Louis II?
Hi, James. It was good fun at the Louis II. Not a particularly high-quality game, but quite an eventful one. We had a couple of goals. We had about three VAR controversies. We had a red card, a squandered penalty. Quite an enjoyable evening.
OK. There have been plenty of changes in the last week or two at Monaco. Four new signings, Cesc Fabregas amongst them, but they weren't allowed to be used in this game, were they?
No. So Fabregas and his fellow new recruits were ineligible because when this game was due to be played in December, they obviously hadn't been registered by Monaco, so they weren't allowed to play. So they were all watching from the stands. And it told, really. I mean, Monaco have looked a little bit better since the turn of the year. They played quite well at Marseille at the weekend. The new recruits, particularly impressive. And without them, this was basically the Monaco that we got used to seeing over the first few months of the season. You know, not all that great, not much in the way of ideas going forward, quite fragile defensively. And Thierry Henry said as much in his post-match press conference. He said, look, this is not the team that I want to be playing with. You know, this group of players cannot do what I want them to do. I think he's quite looking forward to getting Fabregas and the rest of them back into the team on Saturday when they host Strasbourg.
Mm. OK, so they're 2 points from Dijon, who are third last in the relegation playoff position. Can Thierry keep them up?
Yeah, I think there have been signs of improvement since the turn of the year. We know that Monaco messed up their transfer window over the summer, you know, got rid of important players who weren't adequately replaced. And then this massive injury glut they had in the first part of the season left them dependent on some very callow, very green young players. They've moved to correct that in January by bringing in guys like Fabregas, like Naldo, like Freddy Ballotore from Lille. And they have looked better with those players in the team. Yes, it'd be disappointing not to have beaten Nice, particularly because they were playing against 10 men the second half. But I think once those players are back in the team, Monaco should start moving in the right direction.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at RoyTheRoversOfficial.com.
We've heard about Serie A, but what about Syria? Well, here's Matt to give us an Asian Cup update.
Strap yourself in. I've got a very, very comprehensive roundup sent to me by my good friend Paul Connaughton, who works for Fox Sports in Australia. In the UK, we haven't got any TV coverage of this event, so thanks to Paul for helping me with this. He said broadly, by the way, that they've expanded it to 24 teams like they did with the Euros in 2016, and it's been really well received. There's been lots of attacking football. Most of the games have had something riding on them, so very much not like Euro 2016, which is good. Group A, the hosts, the United Arab Emirates, are through. They finished top. UAE through as group winners, but they had some questionable calls in their game. Thailand also through, but they sacked their manager after being beaten by India in their first game. Serb Milan Rajovic was in charge. They were beaten 4-1 by an India team who were managed by an English journeyman called Steve Constantine. Yeah. If you've got time, look at his Wikipedia. His career map is quite unbelievable.
Well, apparently he's co-authored a fabulous book about his career path, which Michael Cox was saying is one of the best football books he's ever read.
So India basically finished bottom of the group, but with the joint top scorers in the group. Yeah. It was always a nice little touch.
Nice.
Little quirk. Group B, Daniel was talking on Monday, wasn't he, about Jordan being the surprise package. They won the group ahead of Australia. Australia have also gone through. Jordan didn't concede a goal in the group stage, beat Australia. Then they beat Syria and drew with Palestine. Aussies recovered from that defeat in their first game, beating Palestine 3-0, but they then needed a stoppage time winner from Celtic midfielder Tom Rogic to get past Syria 3-2 in their final group game. But do you want to hear the nice story about the Australian striker? His name is Awer Mabil. He's a Kenyan refugee, plays in Denmark with Midtjylland, but he represents Australia. And he's been doing a goal celebration in support of people living with mental illness. So he does this action in which he covers his mouth with both hands whilst pointing to his forehead. He says that represents peace to the mind to those who are suffering. And he hopes the image will be shared online with the hashtag AM Challenge.
Okay.
Wasn't it that Australia Syria game where a penalty was given as well for... But it turned out that one of the Syria players kind of fouled another Syria player, and Australia had nothing to do with it, and they were given a penalty, which levelled it up to 2-2 at the time. I think, wow. It, yeah, it all got pretty tense, and then Australia eventually won.
There have been lots of question marks over the officiating.
Some of the refereeing decisions in this competition.
Australia obviously also played in the World Cup game where Graham Poole booked three players.
So true. Yeah. South Korea, through with a flawless record, won all three games, haven't conceded a goal yet, and obviously right. That's without Son to come. China and Kyrgyzstan have also gone through from that group. Iran and Iraq both through from Group D. Vietnam waiting to see if they go through as one of the lucky losers, if you will. From Group E, Qatar and Saudi Arabia are through, and Lebanon waiting to see if they can go through. Not gone well for North Korea. They've played two games, conceded 10, scored 0. See what fate awaits them when they get home. Uzbekistan and Japan through to the knockout stage.
Sorry, man, that was a little
Group
bit
F.
Ominous.
Well, you remember the 2010 World Cup,
yeah,
made to do hard labour kind of thing. Yeah, anyway, Uzbekistan and Japan through from Group F. They're waiting to complete that group today. Japan have taken a very young squad, likes of Shinji Kagawa, left at home. They're kind of planning for the next World Cup rather than making this the priority.
When do the knockouts start?
The knockouts start on Sunday.
Okay.
The last 16 starts on Sunday, and there is one tie, which at the time of recording,
well, there'll be plenty of
was
oh,
already
no, but they might not make it. You think
it's Thailand v China? Yeah, Thailand won it through as one of the teams from Group A.
Oh, they are.
Semis on the 28th, final on the 1st of Feb. Round of 16 kicks off on Sunday.
I'm very confused. Okay, super. All right. Well, let's get some odds potentially on that. I'm not sure. But on other things that are coming up this weekend, producer Ben's been speaking to Paddy Power.
Thank you, Jimbo. Hello, listeners, and moshy moshy to Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, we're running out of time on today's show, so let's get some odds. Let's start with Chelsea versus Arsenal. What's going to happen here?
Tighter than Arsenal's transfer budget, this one. The Gunners are 15-8, so a short price, but we actually favour the away team, Chelsea, who are 13-10, and that's still quite good value. If, unlike me, you don't fancy Chelsea for this one, our money back special does offer you some security this week. It's money back as a free bet if Chelsea win. Selected markets only, pre-match singles only, max free bet £10, T&Cs apply.
Spurs, of course, are going into their match with Fulham without Harry Kane. So give me the first goal scorer market on this one, please. And now that Kane is out, where are they going to finish in the league?
Well, we still think Tottenham win without the talisman, but the first goal scorer market is an absolute mess without the words Harry Kane involved. Spurs remain odds on to win at 4-6, while Fulham are a pretty lengthy 4-1. Fernando Llorente, who did score an FA Cup hat-trick earlier this month, will likely take Kane's place in the team, and he does take Kane's place as the favourite to score. It's 6-5 he scores any time, and 4-1 he scores first.
And finally, right at the bottom of the table, we've said Auf Wiedersehen to David Wagner at Huddersfield. Give us the markets, please, on the next manager to take over at the John Smiths.
Well, you know things are bad when Big Sam rules himself out of managing your club. He was the early favourite, then we saw a run on David Moyes, but now the market is dominated by men I can't claim to know too much about. The current favourite is Dortmund's under-23 coach Jan Sievert. He's ahead of the likes of Huddersfield coach Christoph Buhler, former Dortmund caretaker coach Peter Sturger, and the newly available Ita Karanka.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. 18 plus only, begambleaware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. Who's having a big weekend? Obviously you, Emma, with your...
I've got the Sean Dyche, Andre Gray derby at Vicarage Road. Also, we will be remembering Graham Taylor, Watford's greatest ever manager. 2 years since he sadly passed away. So the done thing is everybody, it's bring a scarf day. And before kickoff, it's quite a sight. Everyone holds their scarf in the air. Mm. And also, we'll be raising a glass. There's a free drinks voucher for every fan before the game.
Oh, that's lovely. I have to say, take a scarf anyway, because it's going to be cold.
It is going to be cold, yeah.
Right. On the subject of the great Graham Taylor, who I only got the chance to meet a couple of times, but was an absolute gentleman, lovely fellow. Among the many things that I've seen this week about him, was an interview with Ken McGill, which I think was actually... Ken McGill was the guy who directed Do I Not Like That, and was kind of mortified at the fact that it essentially... A lot of people saw it as almost, you know, stitching up, or it certainly nailed Graham to a particular vision of his time as England manager. It's a great interview. If you have a look for Ken McGill Talks About Graham Taylor, it's Ken's a very interesting guy anyway. But it just what it says about Graham as a person I've worked with, just as a human being, it's a great little piece. Anyway, so that's what you're getting up to on Saturday, is it? The Clash with Burnley?
Yep.
All right, then. Duncan, what have you got in store?
I will not be leaving the house if the weather stays cold.
I see.
I'll be turning the heating up to unprecedented levels and watching.
Can you access the Optomatrix from your domicile?
I can, yes. It's in the air rather than on the ground, so I can...
I'm struggling with the concept.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, I'm looking forward to Arsenal-Chelsea and Fulham-Tottenham.
Okay.
Yeah, Arsenal-Chelsea, for me, we should probably doff our skull caps to Petr Cech in the week that he announces his retirement. Word that, rumour that he might get a position at Chelsea in some form or fashion once he does hang up his cap. But what a great career he had, and a sign of, you know, how revered he was, that I can't see Roman Abramovich letting anybody else or sanctioning a move for a player to a rival like Arsenal in the way that he did for Petr Cech, much to Jose Mourinho's chagrin.
It's amazing to think, what was it, 12 years ago that Stephen Hunt went in on his head with his knee? I mean, inadvertently, of course, but and at the time, the thought that he would have 12 years pretty much at top level all the way, I think, was furthest from everyone's mind.
Yeah, and his explanation of why that was so devastating for him, because he was a twin, that means that his skull is thinner than most people's
because
of the way that works. Yeah, so that's why he was more prone to that injury and why he had to carry on wearing the cap. Lovely man, Petr Cech.
His first ever season in the Premier League remains arguably the best goalkeeping display ever seen. 24 clean sheets, which I think even Alisson this season will find it tough to beat.
There you go, Petr Cech. Right, well, that's it for us for today. Totally Football Show returns on Monday with another exciting lineup. Michael Cox will be back, Sasha Gurionov, and also Natalie Jedra, so of ESPN Brazil. Woof. So do join us for that, listener, and have yourselves a great weekend in the meantime. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And don't forget to check out our other football podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts, and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5pm till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.